This show furnished by the Queen Mary.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilton here with some special guests that we'll introduce in a minute. Say hi, special guests.
Hello.
Who could they be now?
Hello there.
Very cool people. I'll tell you why they're here. Well, I'll tell you right now. December 9th is a huge day for the city of Long Beach and the Queen Mary. It's the 50th anniversary of the Queen Mary making Long Beach its home port. And what a history the Queen Mary has. And I've got experts here who live that history. I did the Halloween ghost tour on the ship years ago, which was wonderful. We got to go down in the bow, and I got to see, I think, the entire ship. And it is a stunning ship. It's the opening of the new Winston Churchill exhibit. Churchill's great-granddaughter, Jenny Churchill, will dedicate the new installation, and there'll be free admission that day. But it's a stunning history with the ship and with Churchill, and there's so much interesting information about Churchill right now. With the new there's some movies that have come out, one with Gary Oldman, which is pretty stunning. So we'll talk about that in a minute. My first guest joining us now is Steve Sowards, who's the general manager of the ship. Hi, Steve. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you today?
All right. So you have what a job that must be. You must have a blast on that ship, because everywhere you go, it's funny. I guess I'm an empath, but when I'm in a place, I collect old snow globes, okay? And when I hold a snow globe, my favorite ones are the ones that sat on somebody's desk in the 30s, 40s, or 50s with a pen in it. And you look at it and you feel it, and it takes you there for a minute. You're in that environment all the time where you're walking around history, and all the people who sailed on that ship and Churchill, and the impact there. It must be amazing to walk around in that history all the time.
It really is amazing. And you know, first of all, I want to say thanks to you and KABC for helping us celebrate this 50 years coming up in the big event that we're faced with here next week. As you said, it is incredible to be a part of the Queen Mary. And, you know, we've had over 50 million people visit this ship. And
wow.
It just so happens it's also our 50th anniversary coming up on December 9th. And we're excited. And a lot going on here at the Queen Mary as well.
What's your favorite part of it? If you have a favorite thing where you go in every day and you kind of go, I got to check this out because it's what I do. Is there a place you hide out or a place that you hang?
Well, I get the benefit of all the good places, but I tell you what, every morning when I pull into the parking lot and you see this majestic royal ship sitting here in Her Majesty and all of the glory and the history behind it, as you've talked about and getting ready to talk about, you become energized. You can't arrive at this ship, the Queen Mary, and not have energy flowing through your veins. It's quite a feeling.
You know, and we got Commodore Everett Horde here today. In full regalia, by the way. You look so handsome in the outfit. And you can give us some history, because you know a lot of the history of the ship. What was the decision? When was the decision made about the retiring of the ship and the fact that it ended up here in Long Beach? Who made those decisions and why?
Well, Peter, it really started all the way back in the spring of 1967. By that time, the Queen Mary was losing a lot of money for the Cunard Line because it cost so much to run, using 1,000 tons of fuel a day. And alternative purposes for the ship's afterlife were being looked at. And it all started with the city of Long Beach with some pretty far-sighted thinking, offering the Cunard Line an alternative end for their famous flagship, the Queen Mary. And it took hold in the city council and also the state's lands commission, and even Governor Ronald Reagan endorsed the plan. And by the summer of 1967, the successful bid was placed for about $3.45 million. And the
wow.
Queen Mary's future was decided. She would arrive in California around the early part of December of that year of 1967.
What was the arrival like when it came over? Was it a huge thing?
It was really one of these events of the late 60s in Southern California. You know, I spent some time with one of her captains, Treasure Jones. He brought the ship to California. And his stories about the arrival coming up the coast with some 5,000 boats coming out from every inlet along the way. And when he was abreast with Newport Beach, he said, I decided to bring the ship within 2 miles of the coast. So that Southern California could get a look at their latest icon.
It really is special. I remember the first time coming out to see it. A lot of people have never seen, kids, families have never seen a ship like this ever, have never traveled by ship. And then to see this, I remember the first time I came over the bridge there, and you come down, you start getting excited, you see the smokestacks, and it looks like a piece of history that was just plopped down, like a Steven Spielberg movie that was plopped down. How did that get here? Why is it here? And it's an amazing emotional hit when you see it.
It really is, Peter. You know, there really is something about the Queen Mary. It's the last ship from the entire golden age of ocean travel. All the others have been recycled, and they only live in photographs, memories, and hearts. But the Queen Mary has sort of an immortality of sorts. And this year we celebrate 50 years since the propellers have turned a revolution, and that ship has seen 50 million guests since it arrived in California.
That's stunning. And Brian Rowland's with us. He is a senior executive. And you're planning out, you're the guy, they all talk about history and it's nice and we reminisce, and you're the guy who says, okay, here's what we got to do and here are the events we're doing and how we're going to execute them. So you have the tough job of actually creating events and making this 50th anniversary happen.
Well, it's tough, but it's an absolute joy. You know, one of the great things about being involved with the ship is the ability to take that real tacit history, the history that you feel when you're walking on the decks, and find ways to energize that and continue to bring in another 50 million as we face the future. You know, our focus is really kind of past, present, future. You know, we're interpreting the past, we're providing experiences in the present, but really we're looking ahead many years. We've gone through a bit of a renaissance of late. There's some amazing work happening all over the ship. And as we head into the 50th anniversary, while we are celebrating with an amazing event on the 9th, it's very exciting to think this is actually the beginning of a full year-long launch of the ship and really that renaissance coming out for the public.
Well, and you're going to open up the anniversary, of course, is going to happen in a big way. And you also have some new exhibits and stuff that you brought in, which are mind-blowing.
Oh, that's absolutely true. We've been fortunate enough to have this new Churchill exhibition that we've very carefully crafted. We've been working with some amazing people, the Churchill family. Randolph Churchill has been indispensable in that regard, helping put together something very special that is actually tied into a new major motion picture, but that curates a very special part of the story of probably the most famous individual with a long-term relationship with the Queen Mary. That relationship started with her first voyage and continued on well into their mutual retirement. Churchill's a luminary that just still resonates so well with the public, and to be able to curate a part of that story that the public has never seen, how both the ship and he were tied to the wartime years when things were very dark for Britain, and they as a nation had to come together using this ship as a key piece of their military plan. To plan out D-Day, to move the war councils across, to bring in troops for the invasion, to be able to bring that story to life in a really profound way through the film sets that we've acquired, I think it's going to be very special for the public and truly fitting for a 50th anniversary.
And you're going to have this Churchill explain what the Churchill exhibit looks like. I mean, I know what it is, but maybe people don't know what they're going to see, what to expect.
Oh, absolutely. So we've been very fortunate, and this began many years ago with a concept of recreating in the historic spaces of the Queen Mary, a bit of the war bunkers that you might see if you visited the Imperial War Rooms in London. And in fact, we reached out to that group to talk about recreating those scenes, to be able to bring that portion of the discussion of how we were involved with the war effort to life. It was through those discussions that the Churchill family got involved, connected us to this new major motion picture, The Darkest Hour, and we were able to acquire the original film sets. And we're going to be using those in a profound way to create this amazingly immersive environment that is so exciting to walk through, and you truly feel like you step back in time, and you're able to feel a bit of the tension that they all must have felt involved at that time during the war effort, and then to see how the ship was a unique part of that history as well, because the ship served as the war room at sea, as we like to say. We think these days in terms of the president and the vice president never being in the same place, but it was quite the opposite. When Churchill sailed on the ship, he was planning everything for the Quebec Conference and the D-Day invasion with his entire war cabinet. And it's astonishing to think that we, at some point, were one torpedo away from a very different version of history. And I think that's profound, and I think you'll feel that when you walk through this exhibition, and you'll see how special it is to be able to walk through these historic spaces.
Steve, are you still on the phone? We're talking to Steve Sowers, the general manager. You got something you want to add to that? Because I know later on the show we're going to talk to the gentleman who actually runs the war room for the museum over in London, and it's a pretty stunning thing. The one take that I got out of that was the chair is gouged. The arm of the chair is totally gouged from Churchill sitting in that chair and worrying and having his ring gouge out actually the armchair because of all the tension of negotiating what he had to negotiate, and you're sitting there wondering how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, these bunkers are spectacular. I was in London with Randolph Churchill doing a visit with Mr. Reed that you're going to speak to. The energy when you walk through these war bunkers and understand what took place in these war bunkers, the interchanges between the cabinets, himself, of course, his access to his home and his wife Clementine. It's emotional and it's powerful. And when you think of the history that it drives and what the alternative that could have taken place, it really will humble you to know what really took place. And, you know, as Brian mentioned, to have partners like Focus Features who've been spectacular with us, and Phil, of course, who has the eye for the expertise of what we're going to present to the public here in Southern California. It is really, truly exciting. It's historical. And I don't think timing could have been any better than it is now.
That's great. It's mind-blowing. Well, thank you for being with us. We can take a brief break. We come back. We've got more guests visiting us. We have actually people associated with the movie. And if you saw Gary Oldman's makeup, I've worked with Gary Oldman, as a matter of fact, you wouldn't know that it was Gary Oldman. And I hear he was immersed in it. He went to the war room, he went to the museum over there, and he really threw himself into the role and is getting huge acclaim for the role. So, Talk Radio 790 Casey, we'll be back. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of Queen Mary arriving in Long Beach with some really special exhibits, some fascinating people. And we'll talk a bit about the movies and why you should go see the Queen Mary and how it's different. Even if you saw the Queen Mary in the last couple of years, it's going to be a different experience for you this time. So we'll be right back. Talk Radio 790 Casey.
Say, Mama. Mama.
Dada.
Alexa, play the Ting Tings.
Tens of millions of songs, one for every moment. Amazon Music Unlimited. For a limited time only, sign up today and receive 3 months for 99 cents at amazon.com/musicunlimited. Automatically renews, cancel anytime.
Westwood One presents The Ugly Truth with D.L. Ugly.
They seem to be gung-ho on protecting us from people who aren't as dangerous as our domestic terrorists. It was horrible what he did, killing 8 people and mowing down 15 more. The families are all in my prayers. But I think what happened in Vegas was horrendous, too. One, we're acting with urgency, and the other one, we're going, well, that's the best we could do is the price of freedom, which is crazy to me.
The Ugly Truth at Apple Podcast and Google Play.
Aaron's Jolly Days are here. This Friday through Sunday at Aaron's, just $12 gets you started leasing to own top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Yes, just $12 with no credit needed and free delivery and setup. Make your holiday a jolly one. Get started with just $12 at participating Aaron's stores this Friday and Saturday or at Aaron's.com this Friday through Sunday. Just $12 gets you started during Aaron's Jolly Days.
Transaction advertises a rental purchase agreement. Some restrictions apply. So see store for details.
I met someone. You hear it a lot from people on Match, because more people have met their someone on Match than any other dating app. Everyone wants to find that meaningful connection, and Match is not only number one in first, but second dates too. Now here's a free offer for our listeners. Go to match.com/search for 7 days free. That's 7 days completely free to search, view photos, and connect. This free offer is found at match.com/search. That's match.com/search. Match.com/search.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. We're back. It's Peter Tilden hosting a celebration of Queen Mary, the Queen Mary's 50th anniversary of the arrival in Long Beach. They got such festivities planned, and also there's some amazing stuff to get to see. I was lucky last year I got to meet with Randolph Churchill to talk about the family and the history and uncover things that I never knew about Churchill as a man and his relationship to the ship. We've got Steve Sowers we talked to as the general manager. Brian Llewellyn is a senior executive in charge of doing all of the festivities on the ship, and you're smiling now. Everett Hort is with us. He is also part of the deal. And Everett, what is your association with the ship, real quick?
My association with the ship, Peter, is Commodore, which is honorary master of the ship. Also, I'm a senior historian. Been hanging around the Queen Mary now almost 37 years. And the Queen Mary is something that I've loved since I was a young lad.
What is it? What's the attachment there? And then why did you go into the military and become a Commodore?
Well, my job is not a military job, really, at all. As ambassador and sort of face of the ship, you know, a ship has three sides, port, starboard, and social. I only have to man the social side of the ship.
I got it.
But no, my love of ships is as old as I am. My father was in the Navy, and early in my career in the Queen Mary, as I said, I got to spend a lot of time with several of the captains of the Queen Mary in England over a number of years. And, you know, although I didn't realize it at the time, they were mentoring me. And they were leaving the seeds of their legacy to be shared with others. And it's my duty to make sure that the lore of the Merchant Navy and what the Queen Mary was at sea and her 31 years at sea, and then now as a 50-year Southern California icon, her life today, I want to say, is as interesting as it was then as a Southern California icon, because she's our Eiffel Tower, our Big Ben, our Statue of Liberty.
She is, and I got, like as I said in the first segment, that I got to go on that ship for Halloween, where they have these haunted tours, which was great, because I got to go in the bowels of the ship, see parts of a ship I've never seen. But my wife and I also stayed overnight on the ship a couple times, and it really is cool. I can't even explain it. It's the old wood, it's the smell, it's the feel of it. It doesn't feel like anything else. It doesn't feel like you're in any kind of hotel anywhere.
No, it's unique into the world. It really is. There's something of a soul in the Queen Mary, and certainly something left in it in the ship from all the people who sailed her and War and Peace. With the Churchill exhibit coming up, I think it's good to mention that the ship carried some 810,000 military personnel during the Second World War. So when you walk through the Grand Salon, that was the mess hall for the enlisted man. It's hallowed ground. In so many ways.
Incredible. We've got Lisa Bruce with us, producer of the movie Darkest Hour, which just came out. Stunning. It's getting great reviews. How are you, Lisa?
I'm great. Excited to be on your show.
So how did you decide, as a movie producer, you have to feel a topic, it has to resonate with you, and then you have to feel the public is going to get something and benefit out of this because there's a real story I want to tell. How did you come to this story and why?
I produced the writer's first feature, which was called The Theory of Everything. And we were finishing that film about Stephen Hawking in England with company working title. And Anthony McCartan, who wrote that, said, what do you think about this idea about Churchill? And initially I would think, oh, I don't know about a movie about Churchill, but his focus on the story is what makes it so interesting, because it is not a biopic. It's focused simply on the first 3 weeks of his prime ministership in 1940. When he went up against his parliament because they were encouraging him to sign a peace treaty with Hitler, which is a piece of history a lot of people don't know. And the movie really takes you through that perilous time and shows you how close we came to potentially becoming, a Nazified Europe.
Even though this is Hollywood, people hear the term producer, but they don't know what a producer does. Exactly what all of your duties were, from casting to not only looking at the money, but again, having input into the story and saying, well, how do we go deeper? How do we find out what the emotion and the motivation? How did you do that? How did you do the research with the writer to find out what was relevant, what was going to resonate with an audience?
What's so great about working with somebody like Anthony McCartan, he had done a ton of research. And then as we start to pull the thing together and realize and try to figure out how we're actually going to manifest this on screen, we just all continued to do more and more research. And then before that, the very first person we had ever had was who was going to play Winston Churchill, because you really couldn't make, you didn't want to make this movie unless you had an iconic, amazing actor to play him. And Gary Oldman was really the only one we thought of. He doesn't look anything like Churchill, but we have an amazing Japanese artist, and you can look him up. He goes by the name of Kazu, and he ended up spending about 6 months creating a prosthetic look for Gary that would also allow Gary to be in there and have all the movement and all the flexibility and bring all of his acting skills to bear. And it's just an amazing performance.
It is.
It's heralded by all the reviewers.
I didn't see the movie, and I'm going to go see the movie. I saw a clip, and I've worked with Gary Oldman, and when I saw his pic, I didn't know that was Gary. It was stunning because it looked so different. But do you get nervous when you're doing that, that there's a fine line between a caricature and really pulling it off? And how secure is an actor like him thinking, oh, yeah, I can be Winston Churchill? That's a really tough thing to do.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it was precarious all the way through, up until the moment where Gary basically said, I'm only going to do this if I can look in the mirror and convince myself that that's Winston Churchill talking to me and looking back at me. And so that's why we spent so much time and so much detail on the look. And the other thing about it is you just don't have that performance unless you have an amazing actor. I mean, Gary becomes Winston Churchill. Everyone keeps saying after the first few minutes, they haven't even see him anymore. They just see Winston. And on the set every single day, Gary would get there 3 hours before anybody else to go through the makeup. So by the time we would arrive, we always saw him as the prime minister. He always came out of trailer as the prime minister. So you always felt like you were actually talking to Winston Churchill. And then when we were in the actual sets that we built, which are the ones that will be on the Queen Mary, you really felt the power and the gravitas of it, because there's Winston Churchill and you're standing in the war room.
Well, any revelations come to you? Because there are surprises when you make a movie, especially about a historical figure. So here you are playing it. You have the script, you kind of know where you're going, you have the template. Did anything happen where you went, wow, did not anticipate that, did not anticipate the emotion of that?
Yeah, I think what was interesting about the whole process, I would say for all of us, was that everybody has preconceived ideas of such an iconic figure as Winston Churchill. And we really tried to show in this story the man, because he's quite a flawed human being. And he had made terrible mistakes that cost a lot of people's lives prior to this, and he had really been in this period called this emotional political wilderness of 10 years. And this moment that we focus on, and Anthony and Joe focused on so clearly, is this one moment in time where Churchill's strength of vision and his depth of understanding of Hitler and who Hitler was came to bear in such an amazing way, because he was able to sort of coalesce and convince everybody that you had to go against this man regardless of all the pressures. And everybody felt, most of the parliament felt, that they would lose against the Nazis. And it was really Churchill's vision in this moment that I think, as we were making it, we realized how precarious that moment was and how close we came to a very different future, a very different present day, were Hitler to be able to, were he to have been able to take the English countryside.
Amazing. Well, Lisa, thank you for the movie. Thank you for the work that you did. And thanks for coming on. Lisa Bruce, the producer of Darkest Hour, starring Gary Oldman, who looks nothing like Gary Oldman. It's kind of mind-blowing. And we're nice enough to, and these guys can address it, Brian and also Common Everett Hort, about the sets. It was nice that you made these mind-blowing sets of the war room, and they're going to be displayed now. They didn't go to waste. Usually sets are broken down and thrown. There's no room for them, which is heartbreaking. You have iconic sets that don't last. These sets remain, correct?
Yeah, and Sarah Greenwood is the production designer, along with Katie Spencer. And they did this incredible job in building them. Really, they're sort of like a one-to-one exacting of the set, but it also captures all the mood and the detail. And like you mentioned earlier, the worn spot in his chair, because he was fretting all of his decisions, and that's one of the things that Gary was so moved by when he first went to the actual war room and sat in the chair that Churchill spent years in, and he saw the grooved spot where he had beat his ring through all the fretting of decisions, and all of that kind of detail is all the way through the sets, even the cigar smoke and everything, and it was all built to exacting detail, all advised. We were advised by Phil Reed, who ran them for years in the actual war room. So I think if people go to see them, they will have even a more exacting feeling than if they flew all the way to London.
A piece of history. Out of curiosity, before you go, what's your next movie? So you go from Stephen Hawking to this, something light, romantic comedy?
Oh, yeah. Actually, might be looking at a road picture with two sisters that lost their father in 9/11. So but it's actually quite a funny, wonderful comedy that I hope to make next.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it. Gentlemen, anything you want to add?
It truly was a collaborative process, and I think we all saw the beauty of bringing these forward. And luckily, you know, that vision was heavily supported by Lisa and the team at Focus, as well as the director emeritus of the Real War Rooms, Phil Reed. Without their support, this truly never could have come together. But these are wonderfully, artfully made sets that really do evoke the real space. I've been in the real war rooms, I've been in the sets, and it feels authentic in a way that I believe is going to be very powerful. The war room's one of the most visited tourism spots in London. People
right.
feel a connection to that period, that moment in history. And to be able to provide that, and to be able to give you that same feeling, and that
I
same
can feel
connection.
It now, even when we're talking about it. And the Commodore, I know, lives it after 37 years on the ship. We're going to take a brief break. There's so many more questions I want to ask you about the ship, about what people can see for the 50th anniversary celebration. We have more special guests coming on in just a minute here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. So we will be right back.
A Talk Radio 790, KABC News Update. I'm Steve Cumming. The White House has maintained that Michael Flynn acted independently in his discussions with Russian officials during the presidential transition. Scott Shane of the New York Times reports, though, that emails they acquired contradict that.
Actually, all of the top transition officials seemed to have been aware that he was going to make this call to the Russian ambassador, seemed to have been, you know, essentially been briefed on what happened during the call afterward, and that they were all also focused on Russia and how to improve relations with Russia.
The Alabama Senate race is over a week away, with Republican candidate Roy Moore still facing several sexual misconduct allegations. Moore supporter Ann Eubanks says it was a different time when the allegations took place, and even if they're true, there are bigger priorities.
Roy Moore, we know, will stand on conservative principles.
KABC SoCal weather mostly clear this evening with lows in the lower to mid-50s. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
Good morning, Uncle Bubba. I made breakfast, if you're hungry.
Thanks, Jose. Looks better than this pocket donut I was chomping on yesterday. Heading out for another day unclogging drains for $99.
Yes, lots of fun clogging. But this time of year, we start getting a lot of heating jobs as well.
Heating? You smell good plumbers at Mike Diamond do that, too?
Oh, yeah. Wall and floor furnaces, gravity furnaces, forced air furnaces, and heat pumps.
Huh. Maybe I should add heating to Stinky's router services.
Could you get to most calls within an hour?
Absolutely not.
Could you do repairs on the spot without having to make another trip for parts?
No way, Jose!
I wouldn't do it, Uncle Bubba. Nobody wants inconvenient heating repair from Stinky when they can have convenient heating repair from a smell good plumber.
This is Mike Diamond, and I guarantee my plumber will show up on time and smell good, or your house call is free.
Having an issue with your heat? Call a smell good plumber at Mike Diamond at 1-800-446-MIKE. Contractor license number 399-170.
Get a great deal on your new mattress at Revive by Living Spaces, where you'll find Black Friday deals for one more week. Through Sunday, shop memory foam queen sets starting at $395 or save over 50% on a Serta premium queen set, now just $495. And get a $300 Living Spaces card with your purchase of select sets. These deals are only good while supplies last, so hurry in to Revive by Living Spaces before they're gone.
Living Spaces.
This week on Champions of Justice, the topic on the table is lawyers, trial lawyers. You know, the people politicians love to talk about. Tom Girardi and Jack Girardi talk with attorney David Battaglia about the difference between a good lawyer and a bad lawyer, and how your lawyer's reputation can affect your case in court. It's an eye-opener. Tune in Champions of Justice Saturday morning at 11 and Sunday night at 10 here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden continues with our celebration of the Queen Mary. December 9th is a huge day for the city of Long Beach. That is going to be the 50th anniversary of the Queen Mary, making Long Beach its home port. And we've got so much stuff to talk about. We know that the War Room is going to be there. And as a matter of fact, in just a moment, we're going to talk to Phil Reed, who is over in London at the Churchill War Rooms and part of the Imperial War Museum. But joining us are Brian Llewellyn, senior executive of the Queen Mary, and Commodore Everett Horde, who's got the greatest outfit. I want that outfit. It's a very cool outfit, who's been associated with the ship for 37 years. Now, we're bringing over exhibits, which are pretty... You're going to have the War Room on the ship, an actual reproduction that was in the movie we just talked about. But there are other events, and you're going to be escorting some special guests. Why don't you tell us about the events around the 50th anniversary and what's different on the Queen Mary at this point?
So we're looking to really welcome the public to embrace this major anniversary with us. 50 years is an auspicious occasion, and 50 million guests since the ship arrived is something to celebrate. So we'll be offering a free day. Everyone is welcome to come enjoy the festivities. We will be doing a formal reception, and I'll let Commodore Everett touch on those special guests that we'll have. But this is a really special occasion, and we'll be touching on it in a variety of ways through different programming. We even have an original stowaway. From the we have an original stowaway from the last voyage that's going to be sharing some of his stories as the part of the day, and I really think it's going to be fascinating.
Where did the person stow? I almost said he. It could be a she. Where did they stow away?
Everett, do you want to lead in on that?
Well, he snuck aboard at Lisbon, and when he heard that the Queen Mary was going to California, he decided he would catch a ride. And it's pretty easy to find a vacant cabin down in the bowels of the ship where this gentleman stayed.
But how did he get on? I guess it wasn't like Homeland Security at that point.
He went aboard as a visitor. So
and just never left.
And just never left. And he was from Chicago, and he found a lady that was from Chicago and decided to confide in her to ask for a loan of $10 so that he could get a razor. And, of course, she went straight to the Master of Arms and reported him, and he was locked up in the isolation ward after that until Captain Treasure.
And where's the isolation ward, by the way? Does that still exist on the ship?
Oh, absolutely.
It does. You're able to visit it.
Where is that?
It's in the aft of the ship. From time to time, people would get sick on the ship or alternately stow away as this gentleman did. And from time to time, you needed to seclude them away from the rest of the passengers. And all of our guests can explore that and so many other wonderful things.
Is it a nice place? Does it like look a room or does it look like a jail cell?
It looks more like a hospital ward, which is its main service. But, you know, from time to time, it could serve as a brig in a moment. So that's where this gentleman ended at least a little bit of his time on the ship.
And he's coming back.
He is coming back as our guest. We're excited to have him.
Was that a hardship for this person? I mean, or did they take care of him? Did they feed him three meals a day, the whole bit?
Well, Captain Treasure Jones offered him the option of either working out the rest of the voyage at $1 a day or being turned over to the FBI when they arrived in California. And, of course, he chose to work it out.
But what an amazing story.
Amazing. To hear from an actual stowaway. Right now, however, we're going to hear from Phil Reed, who actually is in charge of the Churchill War Rooms and the Imperial War Museum, and you're going to be able to see the war rooms on the ship, the exact replica that was used in the movie. So let's talk to Phil for a minute. Joining us now is Mr. Phil Reed, who's with the Churchill War Rooms at the Imperial War Museum, and I understand, I've just been reading about this. This is a big year, as we said, following the release of Churchill with Brian Cox and, of course, Gary Oldman in The Darkest Hour. This underground bunker in London, you can actually walk everywhere he walked, and the war rooms, it's like a secret underground command center, correct?
Yeah, pretty well, yeah. It's it was very secret during the war, and then was secret for a while afterwards, and then they sort of mothballed large parts of it for a while, and then the Imperial War Museum opened it up as a museum, if you like, in 1984, and then I arrived in 93, and then we looked to expand the historic site, if you can imagine such a thing, which we did, and it's about 2 or 3 hours of tourist time going around.
It's pretty interesting, and it's an underground command center, but they're not that deep below ground. I understand that it's a steel structure, which would have added protection if there was a bomb drop, but a direct hit would not have protected this war room, correct?
Not initially, I think. It's 12 feet down. It's an old converted storage basement, and when you look through it, you can see these steel girders everywhere. What you can't see is that until about December 1940, so about halfway through the Blitz, what they had was maybe an 8-inch layer of concrete designed theoretically to stop the building falling through. But what it wouldn't have stopped is an unexploding bomb coming through the building, which would go through, by the law of physics, at quite a rate.
Right.
And they then commissioned a much thicker raft of concrete above it, which would have stopped most things, but would it have stopped the V1 and V2? V1, not sure. V2, I doubt it. But, you know, the V1s were 200 a day. The V2s were about 2 or 3. So I think they worked statistically on the basis that it was unlikely to happen.
Phil, the room, I understand, looks exactly like it did the minute they turned out the lights and left in 1945 when Japan surrendered. Is it intact? I mean, I know there's a map room. I know there's a bedroom where he slept. And I also heard that the chair there that he sat in is pretty clawed up from him scratching at it because of the tension that was involved sitting there all day and planning and doing what he had to do.
Yeah, well dealing with your last point first, I mean, yeah, it's pretty well battered and around the arms where he had a ring on his right hand, which he battered and leaves a big dent on the arm of the right-hand side. And then the left-hand side, more disturbingly in a way, is a much deeper dent made by his fingernail, supposedly, according to his grandson, also Winston Churchill. But the place has been left very much as it was. We haven't rebuilt it. This is the original thing. And so you're looking into the cabinet room, and you're looking at where Winston Churchill met with his war cabinet 115 times, with his defense committee twice as many times. You're looking in the bedroom where he gave 4 of his speeches, and despite the fact his bedroom has the best bed in the house, where he only slept 3 times because of the lack of plumbing, basically. And then the map room, which just amazing. You know, I mean, it's full of stuff, basically, all of which was found there, and most of which was pretty well where they left it when they went home at the end of the war.
Also, I understand there were they found some rationed sugar cubes that were hidden away by a wing commander just in case. I guess they needed the nutrition as a safety valve for energy or nutrition just in case.
It was sadly much more mundane than that. The three sugar cubes were in an envelope with his name on, which his wife gave him as a precaution against anybody, in inverted commas, borrowing them.
Hilarious.
And what he did, he hid it in the drawer and obviously got home at the end of the war and thought, dang, you know, forgot my sugar. That was all it was. It was sort of petty theft, as it were, you know, he was trying to avoid.
I got to ask you, Phil, because when somebody runs a museum or, in your case, the war room, you get to be there alone at night when it closes up. You've been there alone a lot. Is there any sense you get of the place? What comes over you when you're there? What feeling, what emotion? Because it's played such a big part in history.
It really is quite spooky. You can almost feel the presence of people around you. It's not a place where people got killed or died. So in that sense, it's not really threatening. But you do feel as if it is slightly ghostly, as it were, yeah? And because it is, you know, in large part kept as it was, it's just so easy to imagine, you know, this is really happening, you know?
Yeah, and what else? Any other surprises for you in being associated with the war room, like when you first got there, you first took it over, what your expectation was as opposed to the reality?
I think I probably didn't expect it to be quite as making such an impression as it has. I mean, it really does make a massive impression. You know, when you walk down that corridor and you look into the rooms, you really do feel as if you're walking through history. And this place really does give you that feel. It's that that sort of gets to me, and still gets to me. I mean, I take tours around the site, inside the rooms and so on, and I never tire of it. It breathes life the whole time.
Yeah, even if as you're telling me about it, I'm kind of projecting myself in there and thinking the heaviness of the room, the decisions, like you said, clawing at the chair, gashes in the chair, because the decisions he had to make, and you're wondering if the intel is correct. You're looking at maps, and you're wondering, how is this thing going to end up? And also, did I make the right decisions? It's amazing.
Yeah,
but
you've also got to remember that, I mean, the main reason he's down here is because they're threatening to invade his country and they're bombing the hell out of his city.
No kidding.
You know, that's a scary scenario.
Yeah, it's part of the Imperial War Museum, and I thank you for coming on, by the way. And it's open to the public. The Imperial War Museum, I should say, as we're wrapping up, though, is not near where the room is, correct? The rooms are in a different place, about a half an hour away?
It's on a different site. It's about 20-25 minutes walk. I mean, the rooms are just off the main drag in Westminster, basically. But they're open every day from 9:30 till 6, last admission, 5 o'clock.
So if you're over there in London, you should definitely, it's a must-see. I hear it. It's mind-blowing, as you said, Phil.
Mm.
Even going in there as often as you are, it's still causes you to stop for a moment and say, wow, look at the gravity of what went on.
Absolutely. I mean, it's even the Churchill Museum that we opened in 2005, which is totally different because it's full of electronics and bits and pieces and clearly not contemporary with the place. That alone could engage you for hours and hours, you know. And then when you come to the historic site, you just don't want to go home, you know.
Did you see Gary Oldman in the movie?
I took Gary and the director Joe Wright around and then later some of the cast, and they, of course, recreated the war rooms for the set. And it looks very realistic when you see it as a set. When you see it in the film, it looks totally realistic. It just looks like the real thing. And Gary is just astonishing. You wouldn't recognize him as Gary Oldman. He just looks and sounds just a part. Probably the best Churchill that we've ever had as an actor.
Phil, before we go, what about the sets on the Queen Mary?
Well, when Darkest Hour wanted to make the film, they wanted to make it look as realistic as it possibly could, and a large part of the Darkest Hour is actually set in the Churchill War Rooms. So they rebuilt it. They rebuilt the map room, cabinet room, Churchill's room, transatlantic telephone room. And I have to say, when you see it on film, it just looks like they filmed it on site. We couldn't film it on site because you have to move so many things to make a film down here, and you can't do that down here because everything's so fragile. But really, you would be convinced that they were here.
Amazing. And how did they do that? Did they take measurements? Did they get the lighting right? Did they do everything? How long were they there studying?
They, they were in and out for weeks and weeks, taking measurements, pictures, querying things with me, right, left, and center. And I mean, they really worked at it to recreate it as far as possible, like it was. I mean, there are differences because you've got to get a camera on a dolly round, and
right.
You've got to get actors in and out without sort of breaking anything. But that's the point, is though that while it might look totally realistic when you see it when you are on the set, when you see it on the film,
it translates.
It's mind-bogglingly good. Yeah,
that's what we do here in Hollywood, Phil.
Absolutely. Well, we did it in Ealing Studios, where Alec Guinness held court for so many years.
Right.
So we did a pretty good festival, yeah. And then the Queen Mary.
Yeah, it's the Queen Mary is an amazing. I mean, I've spent a lot of time on that ship. It is stunning, and
yeah.
I'm dying to see this.
I mean, Churchill was a man of whom one of his best friends, Lord Birkenhead, said he's easily satisfied, he likes the best. So you'd imagine he would like the Queen Mary, and he did. And he sailed in it quite a number of times. And they decided for their 50th anniversary they wanted to recreate the war rooms in the ship. And the best way to do that, they established in the end, was really to buy the set and to import it into America and rebuild it in the ship. And that's
Which is great.
Exactly what they've done, really.
Which is great, that it didn't go to waste.
No.
And I thank you for coming on, Phil. Churchill War Room, see Phil when you're in London. And, of course, the Queen Mary's right here in our own backyard celebrating the 50th anniversary. Well, thank
All
you,
right.
Phil. Yeah, sounds like you had a fascinating time with Gary Oldman. He's amazing. I used him in a project. He's pretty interesting. Interesting
yeah.
dude.
Yeah, you want to try and get an interview with him, actually. He's well worth it.
Yeah, no
backyard
kidding.
Anyway, so.
No kidding. Well, thank
yeah.
you. Phil Reed, the Churchill War Rooms and the Imperial War Museum. Thank you so much.
Very welcome.
Thank you, and be safe, and
All
we'll
right.
talk again.
Will do.
Thanks
a lot.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So I thank you very much. Commodore, before we wrap for this segment, you got a special guest that you're escorting around, right? Somebody with the last name that's kind of well-known?
Oh, yes. Jenny Churchill will be on board the Queen Mary for the 50th anniversary, and I will have the privilege of escorting her up to our gala in the famous Veranda Grill. Everyone, of course, is so excited, and I believe Randolph Churchill will be back as well.
Oh, great. I want to come. We spent some time with Randolph last year, and they're wonderful. Amazing people who keep in his memory alive and his memorabilia. They got some amazing stories about Winston Churchill that maybe people don't hear, and I'm sure she does, too.
I'm sure they do. And, you know, because the Queen Mary was practically Churchill's floating Whitehall, we didn't mention that in addition to the war rooms, we've recreated the war suite at sea. And we have an exact reproduction of the suites we've all been curating on to show exactly where the decisions were heard for the first bit of D-Day and all of that sort of thing.
You get you know, every time you say that, there's chills because you think of one man who had to make these insane decisions.
It's truly monumental. And, you know, we're hoping that this exhibit curates that story in a very respectful way. We believe that it does. And this is going to be a long-term exhibition. We want people to be able to enjoy this for many years to come because it's a story that resonates today just as much as it would have decades ago when the ship first arrived. And we believe it'll be valid for decades to come.
Well,
so we're very excited.
You can come see it. It's, like you said, it's going to be there. We'll talk about how you can come see it. We've got some other special guests in just a moment here. When we return, Talk Radio 790 KABC celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Queen Mary and its arrival. In Long Beach. We'll be right back.
My name is Dale Pazinski. I volunteer with United Way to help the homeless in my community learn computer skills and build a basic resume. I don't just wear this shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
I'm Grant Langston, the new CEO of eHarmony. If you're online dating and looking for love, you're probably tired of the lazy text messages, dead-end conversations, and matches that never turn into dates. If that's you, it's time to try eHarmony. Dating apps of one kind or another have been around a long time, but at the end of the day, they're just virtual bars where no one ever buys you a drink. eHarmony's different. We're built to help you have a better relationship, and we do that with 17 years of research and experience. eHarmony's gotten really good at bringing compatible people together. People that want the same things you do and are ready for a real relationship. Hey, it can be fun to play around with online dating apps, but when you're ready to fall in love with someone and have a meaningful relationship, there's one app that's built to bring you real love, eHarmony. Go to eHarmony.com today and get a month free when you buy a three-month plan. Use code DATE. eHarmony.com, use code DATE.
Holiday cookies, who doesn't love them? But all that baking can be havoc on your pipes. Luckily, the pros at SoCal Plumbers 911 are on call 24/7, even on holidays. Licensed and insured, SoCal Plumbers 911 can handle any job. So go ahead, bake with confidence. SoCal Plumbers 911 has your holidays covered. Call SoCal Plumbers 911 and save $50 with their KABC special. Dial 877-PLUMBER or go to SoCalPlumbers911.com. That's SoCalPlumbers911.com.
Talk Radio 790 KABC. I'm Peter Tilden. With me, some special guests celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Queen Mary coming to Long Beach. And 50 years already. December 9th, big day for the city of Long Beach, the 50th anniversary. There's a new Winston Churchill exhibit. Churchill's great-granddaughter, Jenny Churchill, will dedicate the new installation. Free admission that day. But for more information, of course, go to queenmary.com. And we are joined now, aside from my in-studio guest, Brian Llewellyn, who's a senior executive at the Queen Mary, and Commodore Everett Hoard, who's going to be, well, he's been there 37 years. He knows every nook and cranny of the ship. Tim Riley's joining us. He's a curator at the National Churchill Museum. And Michael Bishop is responsible for the Churchill Library in Washington, D.C. and more. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Tim, why don't you give us a little bit of background on Churchill and his encounter with the ship and how he later considered it to be a strategic weapon during the war?
Absolutely. Well, Churchill loved the ship even before it was launched. We're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the arrival in Long Beach, but a little over 80 years ago, before the maiden voyage, Churchill actually wrote an essay for one of the local newspapers in London, extolling how fast the ship was and how luxurious the ship was and how the ship would transform the relationships between Great Britain and the United States. Clearly, Churchill loved the ship even before it was launched, but most importantly, he recognized, because of the swiftness and speed of the Queen Mary that was unmatched, that during World War II, it was a great transport ship and a strategic asset. None of the German U-boats could catch it. It was too fast. And Churchill was amazed at the modern marvel of the engineering of the great ship.
But he had a continued relationship with this ship. It wasn't just that, correct? It went on for years.
Oh, it went on for years. His first encounters with the ship was in the 1930s. But, of course, during the war, the 40s, but even after the war, he sailed to and from Southampton to New York many times. In fact, after he gave his famous Iron Curtain speech at Westminster College, where the National Churchill Museum, he sailed home on the Queen Mary and had great admiration for the ship.
Is it so? It's like Air Force One. I mean, you're using it as your flying fortress in the sky with all the communication, all the people you need. He used it as that on the water.
It was a floating fortress, absolutely. And Churchill surrounded himself with his team, his advisors, his war cabinet. It really was the war rooms at sea during the war.
You know, as I'm hearing that, I'm hearing the tension of having a war room. On the other hand, I love the water. I mean, my wife would never go for it. I always said, when I retire, I want to retire on a sailboat. She said, tell your next wife that, because I love being on the water. There's something that's a juxtaposition of, you've got this tension, you've got the weight of the world, the decisions you're making are going to change what the globe looks like in the future, and yet you've got beautiful sunsets and horizons and dolphins swimming with the ship. Did he ever take advantage of that, or is that why he loved it so much, because of the juxtaposition of the tension and yet the relaxation of being out at sea?
I think Churchill loved the sea. We know that Churchill loved the sea. He wrote about it. He visited ports of call as First Lord of the Admiralty twice in his career. And I think for Churchill, sailing on the Queen Mary was probably a bit of a break from London. And he probably did get a chance to enjoy the occasional sunset. If the weather was smooth, it probably was a great time for him to refocus and re-energize on the voyage between the United States and Great Britain. For Churchill, especially during the war years, and immediately thereafter, when it was being used, the Queen Mary was being used as a troop ship, Churchill was isolated and had some first-class accommodations, to be sure. But there were upward of 10,000 troops on the ship, too, which must have bolstered his enthusiasm to see these brave soldiers on the same ship with the great leader.
And Michael, any thoughts on it from you as far as the Churchill Library in Washington, in your perspective of stuff we may not know?
Well, I was just reflecting on what you said about the juxtaposition between the tension of a war cabinet at sea and the open air and everything else. And he certainly did appreciate that, because the cabinet war rooms in London were very poorly ventilated. You never knew what the weather was like outside. And the smell was pretty bad, too. So the Queen Mary would have been a very luxurious cabinet war room indeed. And we're just happy that after all these years, there will again be a floating cabinet war room on the Queen Mary.
Anything unusual before I let you guys go, Michael, that's in the Churchill Library in Washington we may not know? Or Tim, as far as the National Churchill Museum?
Well, we opened the National Churchill Library and Center 1 year and 1 month ago, and we have a collection of documents, artifacts, and artworks. Some of it is actually on loan from the National Churchill Museum. Some of it is on loan from other collectors. And we have the calendar engagement cards, the original ones, on which the Prime Minister's schedule was kept during World War II.
Wow.
But what we really focus on is programming. So we have a lot of prominent leaders in politics, diplomacy, the military, and also very prominent historians as well, who come in and discuss not only Churchill's legacy, but how it applies to our present-day challenges.
That's wonderful. And Tim?
Well, the National Churchill Museum at Westminster College has probably the biggest work in our collection, which is a Christopher Wren church from London that was bombed in the Blitz in 1940 and left for ruins, but relocated stone by stone from central London to Fulton. And the entire museum has 10,000 objects. It's located in the undercroft of the church, and right outside is a wonderful concrete manifestation of the Iron Curtain that Churchill warned about in Fulton is the Berlin Wall, which was erected and sculpted by Churchill's granddaughter, Regina Sands. So it's quite a place, the National Churchill Museum at Westminster College.
Amazing. Well, Tim, I thank you. Tim Riley, curator of the National Churchill Museum, Michael Bishop, the Churchill Library in Washington, D.C. Thank you for coming on and adding to our celebration here, 50th annual anniversary celebration.
Well, thank you.
Really appreciated. Let's go back for a minute to Brian Llewellyn, the senior executive at the Queen Mary. So a lot of other events happening for this grand opening weekend, which is huge. And again, don't forget, the 9th is the big day. But you said it starts on the 7th, correct?
Correct. We're going to be opening the exhibition on the 7th. There is that'll be the first public view of it. But there's a variety of activities planned. We'll have our guest, Stacy, who will be regaling us about being a stowaway on that final voyage. We're going to be showing some special films. Even our 4D theater has a brand new documentary on the history of the vessel, Journey Through Time, that is absolutely spectacular, cutting-edge 3D special effects. And all of these things are available for the entire weekend. As we see it, we're celebrating for the next year. This is the 50th anniversary of her arriving, and she's truly been a part of Southern California longer than she ever sailed the seas. So it's just a wonderful opportunity for the public to come re-engage with this magnificent ocean liner and feel just how much of a part of the community she has become over the last 50 years.
So it's great. And then, of course, we have Commodore Everett Horde, who's been a part of that ship. That ship is part of you. I mean, 37 years on that ship is a long time.
It is an amazing ship, Peter, but what's most amazing about the Queen Mary today is the fact that she lives, and she lives in a big way. And it reminds me, the day of her launching, King George V said no longer will she be a number on the books, but a ship with a name in the world, alive with beauty, energy, and strength. Another lady spoke that day, besides his wife, naming the ship, and her name was Lady Mabel Fortescue Harrison. And she said most of us will be gone when this takes place. But the ship launch today, called the Queen Mary, will know her greatest fame and popularity when she never sails another mile or carries another fare-paying passenger. And so as we celebrate 50 years of 50 fabulous years here in Long Beach and 80 years of the life of the great ship, we can reflect on that.
And you're going to have Jeannie Churchill. Great-granddaughter, which is really, really stunning. And in meeting some of the Churchill family, they've really kept his legacy alive.
Well, they are. And I can tell you that he ran in the circles of the people that were designing the Queen Mary all those years ago. And the fact that she is designed to Admiralty standards shows Churchill's influence in the ship's overall design. And he also had the insight to know that if war were to ever happen again, what a great asset the ship would be in pursuing peace and freedom.
Well, thank you guys for coming. You know, it's great. It's great to be able to have people with the history that can give you more than just, you know, the metal and the wood to make up that boat. The celebration starts that weekend, and December 9th is the big day, of course. The new Winston Churchill exhibit, his granddaughter will be there, as we said, free admission that day. But for all the information, go to queenmary.com and then knock yourself out. And by the way, The Darkest Hour opened in theaters, and I think it's out already, I think, with Gary Oldman. It's doing well. And again, visit queenmary.com. And from all of us here at KBC, the golden salute to a great ship and a great city as they celebrate 50 years and counting. Thank you very much for coming in, Brian and Commodore Everett. I appreciate it. And all our phone guests, the producer of the movie, and to you too. And I'll see you down on the Queen Mary, because why not? All right, Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This show furnished by the Queen Mary.